Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lauren, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition. And this week, we have a guest with us, our very own Ryan Costello. But first...
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. And I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lauren. I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years, and you can watch me play in the Three Ring Adventure podcast.
I'm Ryan. I'm the director of logistics at the No Direction Network, and one of the co-hosts for now of the No Direction podcast. And I do various other roles around the network.
And you're a great dad, too.
Oh, thanks, Luis.
And this week, we're just kind of talking.
Thanks, son.
About... Okay, hold on.
Sorry.
Are you guys done? Are you boys done? And this week, we're talking about 2021 for Pathfinder. It's a little bit of an early year in review. If you're listening to this a little bit later, we're not going to be talking about Monsters of Myth or the Absalom book because we're just a little bit early for that. But we're going to cover the rest of 2021.
Yeah, Lauren and I have been talking about our schedule for the rest of the year. I'm heading to see family in a few weeks, and it'll be harder for me to record. So most likely, this could end up being our last episode for the year. So we thought, why not talk about everything that's happened with Pathfinder products in 2021. And you know who else likes Pathfinder? Our good buddy Ryan Costello.
I sure do.
So we figured we'd just get together and chat about all the stuff that we liked about that all the cool Pathfinder related products that came out this year that we liked and what we liked about them, and I don't know, I guess our sales pitch for why you should check it out.
And it was a good year for Pathfinder stuff, too.
Well, now, just because we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, I want to remind you that we're not providing official answers. We're just here to offer advice, and you can use it how you like. Remember, the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling. However, don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
Yes, that's true.
I've wanted to say the Luis line for a year now, or more. How long have we been doing this?
Close to 2 years now. Have you been wanting to say that?
I've been wanting to.
You could have just asked. I would have happily let you do that.
I just think it's fun to steal from you.
Oh, okay. I see.
She tried to do the same thing for me. She told me, you know, you always start the adventurous episodes. Why don't we mix it up? Why don't I get a turn every now and then?
I do.
You can.
It's not fun if you give it to me. It's only fun if I steal it.
Well, there you go.
But, yeah, 2021. A lot came out this year, right?
This has been a very long year. it's jam-packed as a result.
Long year is not an optimistic way of saying it, Luis. You're excited about these products, right?
I am excited, but because there's been so many, it feels like some of these products have been out for so long, even though they were all still within the same year. I think I actually told coworkers a few weeks ago, hey, I think we were discussing about all the different products that have come out, and they're like, oh, that came out this year, that came out this year. And I said, yeah, Ancestry Guide came out this year. That was still this same year.
That's the one that blew my mind. Ago. It was forever ago.
Yeah, the idea that the Ancestry Guide and Absalom came out the same year does not compute with me.
Exactly.
if Absalom comes out this year.
It's been reviewed. I have the PDF. I'm fairly confident it is officially coming out.
It might be held up on a boat somewhere, but it's coming.
So, the Ancestry Guide, what was some of your favorite stuff from that?
Oh, well, I was particularly fond of the Beastkin Heritage because I wrote it. Oh, I guess I should say that Ryan and I wrote for a number of these products, possibly. I don't know. Ryan, I don't know if you wrote for this year.
No, I didn't write for anything. I wrote for Legends, which came
Legends
out last year.
Okay. Hey, I wrote for a number of these products. So I guess, full disclosure, my name is in the credits for literally all of them, technically.
I mean, that's par for the course here at Legend Lore, Luis.
Yes. Yes, but in particular, we are specifically discussing products. I think it should be brought up. I can hear Param kind of yelling from far away, saying, "Don't forget to disclose." Yeah, no, but Ancestry Guide, I think just all the weird new stuff in it. Weird is not bad. The Flesh Warp was really interesting, and Beastkin, and I'm trying to think if there was any other particularly weird one.
The Sprite, which has become like one of my new all-time favorite ancestries. I love the Sprite so much. And I always was mad in back in first edition how you couldn't really like play like a little fairy. Like if I wanted to be evil Tinkerbell, I couldn't do it, you know? And now it's like sitting here in like one of the core books. I consider it a core book. Everything that everything that has a hardback is a core book. I'm sorry, fight me.
I won't fight you because I'm fine with that assessment.
I'm not going to fight an evil Tinkerbell. So I do like that this really opened the door for a lot. Like you were saying, there's weirdness in here, Luis. Like we haven't gotten to the weird ancestries that came out in 2021, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, that's true. It's just...
This opened the door for the idea that, like, no, we're not just going to focus on the core rulebook ancestries. If you are a non-core rulebook ancestry, here's a book that's half of the entire page count is dedicated to expanding your options to make sure you're not forgotten. And here's a whole bunch of new options that are just kind of all over the place thematically. And it's mostly just things that are familiar in Galarian, even if they're not your day-to-day ancestries.
And I like that it took some of the character guide options and just really made those fleshed out in a good way. Like, I do sometimes get the character guide and the ancestry guide, like, confused a little bit. But that's because there's a lot of crossover, right? Like, isn't Tiefling in both? Isn't Dampier in both?
No, those are in the APG.
Wait. Oh, and the APG! Ah! All three books are just full of so many good options that I just confuse them all.
Luis has heard me rant about not liking the character guide's title or lack of theme, and one of the reasons I don't like it is the confusion it causes of remembering just what the heck is in that book.
So much confusion. So much.
Yeah. That's fair, but those are old titles. We're talking about the 2021 stuff now.
One of the only Lost Omens books I have anything negative to say about, and you're like, no, we're not even discussing it.
Well, they're not on the docket today.
You're right.
We can bring you on for our, I guess, Lauren and Ryan will roast the character guide episode.
I won't roast it. I like it. I'll just agree with Ryan most of the time.
I guess I'll ask, Lauren, what would you say was your favorite book out of all the books that have come out? Out of all the products that have come out?
Everything this year?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'll give you two answers. The one that I want to be true and the one that's actually true.
Okay.
Before it came out, I would have swore it was going to be Secrets of Magic. I love that book so much. There's so much fun stuff. Every time you turn the page, it's something else new and exciting. But in actuality, my favorite book from this year is Guns and Gears.
Ooh.
There's just the automaton alone. I made a point to say the Sprite has become one of my all-time favorite races because the automaton is now the other one. One of the freaking heritage feats you can get is like a little like shoulder laser cannon, right? Yo, I have so many builds specified on just different ways to use that laser cannon. One of my favorite is Monk, Flurry of Blows, with a laser cannon. Do you see why the automaton is incredible?
Yes. Yes, I do. I understand completely.
You wrote it, right?
Yes, I did write it.
Congratulations.
Full disclosure.
Lost in Space Season 3 just started, so I'm all about the automaton too right now.
That's great.
I hear that is so good.
It is so good. And you know what? This is the last season. There's only about 50 episodes in total, so check it out.
I might.
No, that's just like 26 episodes in total. Anyway, there's not much. It's an easy watch.
How about you, Ryan? What would you say is your favorite product?
Oh, I'm going to narrow it down to 6.
Oh, no biggie.
No, there's 2. Uh-huh. One of them is Guns and Gears, but the thing about Guns and Gears is as much as I like it, I also know it's probably the most divisive book that came out this year. Like, this is a very specific tone of Pathfinder not everybody subscribes to. So, yeah. With that in mind, I would say the best book for, like, the content really excited me, and I think it really appeals to a broad audience, is Moengi Expanse. Mm-hmm. The book had so much. It made me so interested in the cultures there. I learned so much. It's presented in a way that I actually was absorbing the information, which campaign setting books and I have a history of not working well together, but this one actually really did stick out to me. And the balance of mechanics, because there's a lot of mechanics in there and it's really exciting, and yet there's also a lot of lore and culture, and it's a big book, but still the fact that, like, I can't even stop and say, like, oh, but this is a mechanics book, this is a lore book. It's just, it's an everything book. I mean, you both know that. You covered it over 3 episodes to just be able to cram all the awesome stuff of Moengi Expanse out there.
We were only planning to do 1 episode, but it just, we kept going deeper and deeper, and it's like, this book deserves 3 episodes. It forced itself to have 3 episodes.
It's very, very big. I mean, yes, that's part of the reason, is it's how big it is. We did Eye of Dread, and we had 8 pages to work from on the world guide originally, rather than 300 pages compared to the Moengi Expanse, so that was a big part of it.
So, Ryan, you said that the lore from that book just kind of stuck with you better, and I kind of feel the same way, but why do you think that that lore was received and absorbed a little bit better?
So I think it's that it's contextualized by the mechanics. So the fact that it has so many mechanics, anytime it's like, here's a part of this character, this ancestry or this culture's history, there would then be a mechanic in being like, this mechanic is in this section for these reasons. And it just, all of the connecting tissues made the most sense. So no matter how you're reading it, if you're reading it just for the interesting stories that are presented in every chapter, or you're reading it for the mechanics, you cannot get away from the 2 different parts. Everything blends together. And it's a thick book, but I found it actually a very brisk read on top of that. So it's well written on top of being very logically presented and assembled.
Yeah, I loved how, like, the Matanji orcs, to reinforce that, you know, they hunt demons and, like, use their blood in, like, rituals. They then added, you know, like, the demon blood drinker, like, orc feet. It was so cool. I think the thing that stuck out to me the most was probably the art, though, because it was so evocative. And as you're going through each of these different populations, each of these different kinds of elves, the art for each elf, like, it really stood out to me. Like, I still think about, like that city with all the fog and, you know, it looks abandoned. And that's where those elves with the demon buildings live.
Yeah, one of the reasons that I'm playing a Teralu dwarf in the Abominations Vault game that we're playing with Vanessa is that they're just so striking with their glowing fluorescent hair. And then I even went with the Wormblessed Bloodline, which is a bloodline in their section. So even though it technically I did not have to be a Teralu dwarf or even a dwarf to take this bloodline, because it was so thematically tied together, it's like, there's no other option, even though it ended up not being a great combination mechanically. But, like, just, I felt so much more satisfied knowing that I was playing this worm-blessed character with a Teralu dwarf, and it was just all, like, as the book presented it, which is rare. I usually like finding the exceptions to what the book presents, but this one just made me want to just fulfill this fantasy.
Well, I mean,
it's not even my favorite dwarfs in the book. My favorite dwarfs in the book are the
Imbeke,
because of the story about how they their quest for Sky, when they found Sky, they didn't know what Sky looked like, so they kept digging. They kept digging into the sky and into the plane of air, and the people of air are just like, what are you doing here, and how did you get here? Oh, it was wonderful.
I love stories like that. Like, I mean, the real world is full of stories like that too, but I think getting more of those into Pathfinder is great. Just to, like, understanding the type of stories people tell, I think, can help really inform you on who they are.
Well, how did you guys even come up with
these? It's presented well,
stories?
Too, because it's not like this is absolutely the history of what happened with these people. No, it's told as this is what the Imbeke people say about their quest for Sky. And so you can, like, any part of it that you're like, that's a little too fantastical or ridiculous, you can just assume that's embellishments. Like, it empowers the GMs to decide where they're going to draw the line of what is actually happening with this history.
Lauren, you asked, where did that story come from in the first place?
Not necessarily that particular story, but you guys have tapped into... I mean, this really feels like the kind of story that an actual, like, Earth mythology would have told. Mm-hmm. You know, especially anyone who studied mythologies can see a lot of those elements in it. How did you guys tap into that so well? Like, are you guys some scholars of ancient mythologies or something?
Well, I mean, some of the freelancers who write for these books include actual, you know, scholars and teachers and college grad level students that are well informed with that kind of stuff, right? And then the varied voices that, in particular, a book like Mongi Expanse brought on meant that, you know, people probably heard stories like this growing up or knew these stories from cultures and backgrounds that unique to them that just is very easy to translate into, oh yeah, this is how I would explain my fantasy, rather than the typical stuff that you read in Western European fantasy.
It works. Well, speaking of abomination vaults, Ryan, I think your dwarf character works. I think that I brought a pixie rogue to the table. All of my damage comes from flanking, and I can't flank. Like, come on.
So, hey, hold on. If you're a pixie, you're small.
Oh, well, yep. Okay. I say the word pixie, my sprite. It's a melixie. Okay,
so you're actually a tiny.
Because,
just making sure.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know. I've always thought, like, Tinkerbell is a pixie. Mm-hmm. That's the word that comes to me. No, I'm a melixie. Got the little butterfly wings and can talk to roaches. Hey, bum. That's how roaches talk. You know, if a roach could talk to you, hey, bum. You got any little food for me?
And as it turns out, there's a lot of roaches in Abomination Vault, so that's come up quite a lot. Whereas my character, one of his big things is intimidation, and so far, a lot of the things have been immune to any kind of mind affecting. So, as much as I'd like to pop my claws, just walk into a combat with, like, flaming claws and intimidate people right away, and I even doubled down on it when we got to second level and I took the swashbuckler wit archetype, I have rarely, if ever, used my full intimidation complement, like the whole power suite that I had envisioned for this character. So between that and him being a dwarf, which has a charisma penalty, and a sorcerer, which relies on charisma, and him being a sorcerer that goes to the front line and then, you know, you want him to get out of there as soon as it gets a little too real, and I am extremely slow. So it's just, I've been taking some terrible beatings and only dishing out a couple of decent blows.
Well, I wonder how much of that is just Abomination Vaults being ridiculously hard. What was up with that? I mean, all these fights at level 1, and then one of those little suckers throws out a third level death spell to just basically insta-kill somebody? Not insta-down them. Insta-kill them. What is going on in there?
Well, Luis, maybe you can give some insight into when was Abomination Bolts being written as it relates to when Second Edition was actually released and you were starting to get feedback on the system.
Abomination Vaults would have been written a few months before I was writing the first of Ruby Phoenix, so probably late 2019 to early 2020, which means that the game had been out, and at the very least, two of the people who are writing on it, you know, James Jacobs and Stephen Ratty McFarlane, knew the game because, you know, Stephen used to work at Paizo as a designer and literally helped write the game, and James Jacobs is here and has access to the game has had it for quite a while, so the game had been out. In terms of, like, figuring out encounter balance, we might still be kind of feeling things out just a little bit, but, like, the rules and mechanics, writing and stuff, that was kind of pretty solid at that point. And I'm sure Vanessa also had a pretty solid grasp on the game at that point. In terms of encounter balance, it's probably still a little more work to figure that out. It's something I had to figure out on my own Thankfully, I get to playtest the stuff that really was really dangerous. I wrote a Pathfinder Society quest and scenario, and I made sure to play test those and realize, oh, these numbers can be pretty rough. Even like a creature two levels higher, right, can be a pretty big deal.
Well, you said Abomination Vaults has been tough, but I would say there's just been a couple of tough encounters. And for the most part, because it's kind of open world and you get to freely explore the dungeon as you want, that's one of the consequences of giving that kind of freedom to explore. I do think that it was ratcheted up a little bit higher than it should have been, but it wasn't the worst case that I've seen of something like that. And actually, it was just that one ability of that one monster, when played out fully rules as written, was deadlier than it probably should have been.
I think people looking for a classic dungeon crawl will probably be pleased, actually, to hear that. Things can get pretty rough sometimes. It could be pretty deadly sometimes, because that's, you know, classic staple of the deadly dungeon delve.
Yeah, we are also not a particularly balanced party. We don't really have a tank, and we have a rotating cast of players, and so the main four of us, it's a monk who does okay at tanking but wasn't designed to be. There's me, the tanky sorcerer. There's Lauren, the roguish sprite. And what is Jason playing?
A wizard?
Yeah, and a wizard. So we have like an amazing back line.
But you're all back line.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'm front lines. I went with the melee rogue. Here's my little I told you so moment. You guys tried to talk me into doing my original build, which was like a ranged mastermind. And I was like, no, I can't do it. We don't have enough front lines. Look at me. Look at me now. I'm one of two on the front lines.
So I don't think you're on the front line as often as you're presenting, Lauren. It's usually me and Dave with his monk, and then you eventually make your way around there.
I have the tiny little legs. I get up there as fast as I can. I'm a rapier character.
Ryan, am I just blanking out already? You said Wongy Expanse. Did you say that there was a second book that you...
I said Guns and Gears was my second favorite.
Oh, Guns and Gears, because it was divisive. Yes. Okay. Great, cool. And then it sounds like you have a rule book that you really like and a Lost Omens book that you really like.
Yeah, well, and Guns and Gears, I really liked. A lot of the presentation felt a little more like what I was come to expect from a Lost Omens book. It really, like, just chunking the material together into the guns section, the gears section, and then, like, the world's lore section, the rotating gear, which is a really cool name for that. It lets you read it in a certain headspace, and so even if it is divisive, if you're more inclined to gears than guns, like I was, you get the entire chunk there, and you get to just be focused on this is the weird finicky inventions and the people that are obsessed with them and how the technology has developed, and you just get to follow through that whole through line for the entire section of the book before moving on to the next one. And the inventor is just an amazing class.
Well then, Lauren, your favorite is in the rule books, Guns and Gears, but what would your favorite Lost Omens book be?
Well, okay, so I'll give you two again, because my real answer my real answer is the Mwangi Expanse, but we've already covered that, so I want to give a shout out to my side piece, the Grand Bazaar.
Yeah.
I just some of those items are just so clever and so evocative. And when I'm reading magic items, I'm not reading them for the concept. I'm probably going to change a concept. Like, one example is the Fire Eater Helmet or something. I'm not using that in Three Ring Adventure as a helmet. What I've done is I've got like an amulet or something that just brings out the latent fire ability of my fire sorceress, right? But I just use the rules of that. That's what I'm talking about. That book's, the number of items in it where you can just kind of use them and change them and make it fit your character so well is just, chef's kiss. Wait, does that count? Grand Bazaar is Lost Omens, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that totally counts.
All right. I was like, wait, am I?
You're good.
What about you, Luis? Like, what were some of your favorites? You've heard from me and Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I would also agree that my favorite book, probably for the entire year among all the books, is The Manga Expanse. But I would probably say a close second, if not maybe also tied with Mangi, was The Ancestry Guide. Just, I don't know, a big shotgun blast of mechanics that are all really interesting. And each of those ancestries, I think, can inspire 8 different characters. Which I think is more than a class could necessarily inspire sometimes. A gunslinger, I feel like, oh, you can get like 4 or 5 of these, and then you just choose, like, well, this could work as a kobold, this could work as, you know, a human, this could work as a dwarf, but ultimately the character that I'm building is a sniper or a shotgun user or whatever. Whereas seeing a kobold and seeing all the different cool things that kobolds could be, like, oh, I could be a sorcerer, I could be a rogue, I could be a trapsmith ranger, and, you know, that, I think, leads to a lot more inspiration, for me, at least, for cool stuff. It's great. Ancestry Guide, like, whether or not I had contributed to it, it would be an amazing book, I think.
Well, in defense of... Okay, I'm going to defend Guns and Gears for a minute. Because you have Inventor, you have Gunslinger, and, but you also have Inventor Archetype and Gunslinger Archetype, which you can use to just season like 100 different classes, you know?
Same? Yeah, no, I mean, I don't doubt that at all, but that's why I said, for me...
Why do you hate Guns and Gears, Luis?
That's right, yeah.
I don't hate Guns and Gears. I would love to play an Inventor sometime. I just... If I have to pick one book out of all of them, it's Mangi Expanse for Ancestry Guide. Out of the rule books, it's probably Guns and Gears is my favorite for the year as well. I'm not big on magic in general. Like, I'll play magic characters, but I tend to lean towards marshals and other stuff that is less magical usually. So Guns and Gears was really scratching an itch better than Secrets of Magic was. Bestiary 3 is fun, cool book, lots of cool monsters, but I got a lot more out of Guns and Gears, I think, out of the rule books that came out this year.
Well, Ryan, that's why Luis didn't pick or nominate Secrets of Magic for 1 or 2. What's your excuse?
I like Guns and Gears better. I also am not much of a caster character or caster player. So I did find Secrets of Magic really interesting, especially that first section.
Yes.
After that, it was just kind of what I was expecting. So the classes were good, the options were good, but it's also not the kind of stuff that I usually get as excited about. Whereas Guns and Gears, that stuff was really stretching the imagination.
What I think the reason Secrets of Magic is still really close to Guns and Gears for me is because it allows me to make, in Pathfinder 2nd Edition, the iteration of my favorite character that I've ever had. I always try to keep her updated and, you know, like with all the rule books, but Magus. Sifrun Friestatir is a Magus for sure. I'm thinking Magus with champion archetype, because you know me, I have to have an archetype.
Is she a Viking?
Oh yeah. Well, her name is Sifrun Friestatir. Like, yeah, a Viking.
But is she Batman?
No, that's a different test. It's either the Batman test or the Viking test. Yeah, no.
I'm sure there's going to be some class where the two overlap very well.
There's at least one Viking Batman action figure.
That's
there you go.
I'd like you to send me a picture of that, Ryan. That's very cool.
I will find it. Not right now.
No, like.
So I do see myself playing a Magus before too, like, not before long. I don't know why this just doesn't feel like sense. I'm trying to say, soon I see myself playing a Magus. specifically a flail Magus, because Abigail called a flail a magic wand.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So that's the direction I want to go there. And just, I really like the Magus in 1st edition. I think the Magus in 2nd edition looks like it would be just as fun. Actually, I played it in the playtest, and it was a pretty fun class. And the summoner in 2nd edition speaks to me more than the summoner in 1st edition did. So there's a good chance I play both of these classes before I play both classes from Guns and Gears. Just because Gunslinger's not my style of class.
Well, maybe you guys can help me. I don't understand the point of the summoner. We have so many ways to get into being a pet class. Now, you can be a pet class main just by going down the Beastmaster tree, right? And it feels like Summoner is just that with extra steps.
It's that plus additional bonuses. Like, you can... You don't have to control them the same way that you would an animal companion. You don't have to command them. They just know what you want them to do. You get more control over them. They are a pet plus, I guess. A stronger plus. Pet.
Yeah, so the summoner concept I had was a tiefling with an angelic eidolon, and it would be the angel on his shoulder, just that they would be in moral conflict with each other. And that's the kind of concept you can't deliver with just an animal companion.
That's fair, and that's also pretty cool.
I make pretty cool characters.
When
they're not always functional, but they're usually a fun idea.
Well, see, when I think of Summoner, I can't get past my dumb ideas to get to any cool ideas like that. When I think of Summoner, I think of I could have a giant crab.
You could.
Or that I can't get past that. Like, that's my favorite thing. I'm just like, oh my god, big crab. Go pince, pince, pince.
But then what if why get past that? That's true. There's no need to get past that. But but also, what if that crab was a ghost crab?
What kind of unfinished business did this crab have?
Oh, I'm sure... Whatever it is, I'm sure it's angry business. Those are the most ornery critters, I swear.
I mean, you can get the Whirlwind Maul with a crab. That sounds like... Snap, 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 snap.
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. The other one I like is I like that you could have, like, a dragon eidolon. And that's one of the iconics, mm-hmm. too, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's not a lot of ways to actually get access to, like, something that is distinctly dragon. I mean, there's a few. You know, there's, like, the dragon scale kobold. There's, like, the dragon disciple. But, you know, that's about it. There's not a whole
ancestry on Pathfinder Infinite. Dedicated to being a dragon person.
As I hear, there's a book coming out pretty soon that's about to have like 60 something dragons in it you can play.
I was plugging Luis's thing. What are you talking about?
Maybe something in the Battle Zoo Bestiary line.
Oh, there we go.
I actually really like Luis's Dragonkin ancestry, though. I think that fits a really good place. It's something that we needed. Like, half dragon has been a concept for a long time. I know half dragon's not half dragon, but it is to me.
It's basically the half dragon. That was the point of it. Anyway, yeah. Do you? I mean, you're playing Abomination Vaults now, so I'm sure you have a very limited scope of like, oh, I like the AP so far, one floor in. So I don't know if you've checked out any of the other adventures that come out or something from the Adventure Path line. I personally am a big fan of Strength of Thousands in particular because it has a huge focus on non-violence.
So I have the whole set now, I believe, of Strength of Thousands, or maybe I'm missing book 6. And I plan on just reading it as just for pleasure. I'm really curious to see what you did mechanically with it and how you... the time span of it really interests me. The fact that your characters are growing up and they're changing their station within the school, and it really feels like it says just because X is how Pathfinder usually works doesn't mean X is how Pathfinder always has to work. So let's like do a cursive Y and see what we can do here. So I'm looking forward to checking out the cursive Y of Strength of Thousands.
That sounds pretty awesome, actually. I'm gonna be honest. I'm so busy with my graduate studies that I didn't even remember what the elevator pitch for Strength of Thousands was. But now I'm remembering. This is like Pathfinder's Harry Potter in like the Mogambi institution, right? No?
So much more than that.
Yeah, I mean,
give me the elevator pitch. Quicker.
Well, I mean, you're already adults. You're of adventuring age and stuff. So then you eventually go on to be from students to teachers and stuff like that. You're traveling the world and doing good on behalf of the Mogambia.
I think it sounds awesome. I'm pretty stoked to try and play Ruby Phoenix, though. Like, something about this whole, like, It's a big martial arts tournament. Go punch people and throw hadoukens. That just really speaks to me.
Honestly, it's kind of funny that we're playing Abomination Vaults, because of the three adventure paths that came out this year, it would probably be the third one that I would want to play in. Or actually, maybe not. No, I think Straight to Thousands is something I like more conceptually than something I would ever see myself playing. But Ruby Phoenix was something I was very excited about. Abomination Vaults was like, this looks good, but not as like, it didn't stand out as much as Ruby Phoenix.
Yeah. Well, you can cut all this if you want, Luis. That's why I put a clap in there. I mean, okay. Maybe we can talk old Jason and running Fist of the Ruby Phoenix for us.
Fist of the Ruby Phoenix starts at like 11th level, though. So there is a level gap between where we...
Once you finish Adventurous in Abomination Vaults, you'll be the right level.
Oh, Abomination Vaults isn't adventurous. It's just for friends fun. Playing a game together.
Once you... Yeah, well, then they're even there.
It's not content. What? Are we even allowed to play and it not be content? This still boggles my mind.
You've made it content by bringing it up here, though.
Well, yeah, but I put the clap at the front. All right, here. I'll book it.
No, but I mean, earlier you talked about Abomination.
Oh, yeah,
it somehow became content.
Well, I'll book...
It's anecdotal content.
Well, let me book in my clap so you know where to cut it.
Okay. I'm not cutting any of that. I'm keeping the claps in, too.
Oh, no. My antics revealed for everyone to see.
Well, I think we got a good understanding of what everyone liked this year. Even though Paizo doesn't give their schedule out this far in advance, is there anything coming up next year that you're looking forward to?
Book of the Dead, Book of the Dead, Book of the Dead.
Uh-huh.
I can
no. So I'm honestly, if I get into some more games this year, I'm looking forward to playing the 2021 content, because so much of this is just really exciting to me. And you know, you can only play a couple of characters at a time at most. So the stuff that we do know about 2022, like Book of the Dead, doesn't really interest me. Maybe as a GM more, but no, it's really, I look forward to 2022 as a chance to revisit 2021.
There you go.
I have two character concepts that I'm very excited to play, and both of them require Book of the Dead. One is a vampire pirate.
Vampirate?
Yeah, thank my you. Vampirate. My vampire. That's right. That's what I've been saying. Vanessa hates all my characters because they're all like evil or criminals. but like Dampier just doesn't
not
quite
enough.
Scratch the itch. It almost scratches the itch. It tickles the itch, which you know just makes it more itchy. So I need vampire. And the other one, and I don't know why I love this idea so much. Well, to tell me, has it been revealed? Is skeleton an ancestry or a heritage?
I think we said it was an ancestry. I don't... you sound disappointed.
I do. I want to play a Conrasu who, instead of like inhabiting like a wooden structure, like has taken over a skeleton.
Yes, you've talked about this before.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that. And right now I'm using Conrasu Dampier because it's the closest thing I can get. But if I could do Conrasu Skelly Man, oh, that'd be great.
I love that Conrasu Dampier is such an out there concept to begin with, and you're like, I'm settling.
Yeah. Yeah. What can I say? You ought to know by my builds, they're all pretty out there.
Is the Conrasu Dampier like an assassin vine, but like, you know, with a black orb in the middle of it?
No. See, it's been taken over. It's still a skeleton. I'm just using Dampier as the mechanics for it. So it's like a skeleton, but like the head has the Conrasu in it instead of like the Conrasu being in all like the wood and the vines.
I like it.
I have no idea what class it'll be because I really kind of don't care.
Summoner.
We'll see. That's all we have for you today. Make sure you check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection because it's the support of our patrons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ryan.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.